Blessings, everybody. This is Dale. Thank you so much for joining with me today on the Word Podcast. We are in the midst of a rebuke that I dare say is second to none. Joab is confronting David, and we looked at the first part of it in a previous episode. We're in 2 Samuel chapter 19. Let's look at it again, verse 5. It says this, "Then Joab came into the house of the king." Now, pausing for a moment, this is after Joab hears that David is really, really mourning the loss of his son, Absalom. And like everybody knew about it. The city knew about it. The soldiers knew about it. Everybody knew about it. Joab comes to the king. Now, remember how Absalom had died? Who killed him? Yeah, Joab was the one that killed him. He comes into the king and says this, "Today you have covered with shame the faces of all your servants, who today have saved your life and the lives of your sons and daughters, the lives of your wives and the lives of your concubines. By loving those who hate you and by hating those who love you. For you have shown today that princes and servants are nothing to you. For I know this day that if Absalom were alive and all of us were dead today, then you would be pleased." Now, in the previous episode, we went into all the stuff about that. But there's something else that comes to mind about this as I was reading it just then. The fact that Joab was the one that killed him and initiated with three spears. Remember that? Then 10 other men speared him. Would this not also be a way of Joab justifying himself, going against the king's orders? Because the king had told him, don't bring harm. Deal gently with him, okay? But Joab is bringing forth a defense of himself for what he had done, okay? When you read all this from the point of view that he's being very proactive in defending what had occurred and the fact that Absalom was dead. Now, he continues, verse 7, Joab's not done yet. Now, he's literally telling the king, his uncle, he's literally telling him what to do. Verse 7, "Now, therefore, arise, go out and speak kindly to your servants." And that word kindly carries the idea of speak to their hearts. Speak to their hearts, to the heart of your servants. "For I swear by the Lord, if you do not go out, surely not a man will pass the night with you, and this will be worse for you than all the evil that has come upon you from your youth until now." So now, was there a degree of hyperbole going on right here? Well, maybe, but maybe not. Maybe not. He says, hey, this is what you need to do. You need to go out there and you need to speak to the heart of your servants, these soldiers particularly, because Joab was over the army. You need to go out there and speak to them as you should, as their leader, as you should on the day that they were victorious. And then he says, "I swear by the Lord." I mean, he's irritated. He's mad. He's angry. He's scared. He's scared. But he's telling the truth right here. He says, if you don't go out there and do this, there's not going to be a man that will pass the night with you, which means by this time tomorrow, you're going to lose your army. You're losing these guys because of the way that you are acting and behaving. You are wailing and flailing in grief over someone who was your enemy, that your servants went to battle over to save your life and all your family and entourage. They did this, and now you're moaning over them. And remember how you described it before. You're loving those who hate you, and you're hating those who love you. You're losing these guys. If you don't go out there and speak to them and speak to their hearts, he's telling them what to say and how to say it, you're going to lose them. And there's going to be a greater evil that comes upon you than from all the evil you've experienced from your youth to now. This is going to be bad, he's saying. Verse 8, "So the king arose and sat in the gate." So the king did it. He got up. He went down and he sat in the gate and he was there before the people and before the army. And when they told all the people, verse 8, saying, "Behold, the king is sitting in the gate," then all the people came before the king. So everybody comes before the king as they would after a victory like this. The end of verse 8 says this, "Now Israel had fled each to his tent." We saw that earlier when Israel was defeated. They all fled. They went back to their tents. And this is the Israel. These are the ones that went with Absalom, that sided with the side of Absalom. Verse 9, all the people were quarreling throughout all the tribes of Israel. And so it's talking about those who had gone with Absalom, that they're quarreling. And here's what they were quarreling about. They're saying this: the king delivered us from the hand of our enemies and saved us from the hand of the Philistines. But now he has fled out of the land before Absalom. However, Absalom, whom we anointed over us, has died in battle. Now then, why are you silent about bringing the king back? So they were saying this. They're saying, hey, David delivered us from our enemies. He delivered us from the Philistines. But when his son rose up against him, he fled. So we stayed with his son. We thought he's going to be the next king. We anointed him as king, but he's died in battle. Should we not now welcome back the king and bring the king back? And they wind up doing that. Then verse 11, then King David said to Zadok and Abiathar, the priests, saying, speak to the elders of Judah, saying, why are you the last to bring the king back to his house, since the word of all Israel has come to the king, even to his house? So now, and obviously there's a period of time that takes place for all this, for the word to go out throughout all the kingdom, for the ones in the north to say, no, let's take the king back. Let's do this. Let's agree to do this. Well, those of David's own lineage of Judah had not, the elders of Judah, had not brought him back yet. So now David's saying to Zadok and Abiathar, these are the ones, remember, that had sided with David, that were part of his information strategy and all that kind of stuff. He says, why don't you go say to the elders, why are you going to be the last? Because the word has come out of Israel that the king has been received back, even his house. Why do you want to be last? And David brings a little bit of a defense of himself here in verse 12. You are my brothers. You are my bone and my flesh. Why then should you be the last to bring back the king? So he's saying, hey, I'm of this line. You are my family. Why should you be the last to bring me back? All the other tribes have agreed to it. David's trying to unify everything that had been divided here. Then he lets them know something right here. Okay? And he lets us know something too. Verse 13. Say to Amasa, are you not my bone and my flesh? May God do so to me and more also, if you will not be commander of the army before me continually in place of Joab. Now, Amasa, I believe, was a nephew of David's, just like Joab. But now what David is doing is saying, hey, Joab did what I told him not to do. I am dethroning him from being commander of the army, and Amasa is now going to be commander of the army. So he let them know, I'm dealing with Joab. I'm dealing with what he did. And so Amasa is going to be over it. Verse 14, look how they responded. Then he turned the hearts of all the people of Judah as one man, so that they sent word to the king, saying, return, you and all your servants. Then the king returned and came as far as the Jordan, and Judah came to Gilgal in order to meet the king, to bring the king across the Jordan. So Judah sent back word, says, yes, that's great with us. We'll receive you back as a king. The northern king tribe said, yes, we will receive you back as king. Is it finished? Not quite yet. There's still a couple little things that David's going to be dealing with right here. But overall, David is now being restored as king. Well, again, I'm Dale. I'll see y'all next episode. Goodbye.